All right. Welcome back to the show, my friends. My name is Dan Hafner. For those of you who are just joining for the very first time, welcome to the show. If this is the first time you're listening, good luck. It's going to be interesting. For those of you who are regular listeners, I appreciate you coming back. Thank you, as always. I have a really cool guest. We're going to talk a little bit, maybe a little bit about some tech stuff, but more about business. This can be kind of maybe a different type of topic, so it's good to kind of switch stuff up every once in a while. But before I introduce my good friend, Nick, just want to start with the same thing I start with every podcast show. Please rate, review, subscribe, leave any kind of ratings, share the show in any way that you possibly can. That's really, really appreciated. Helps the show grow, helps us get to the top of the algorithm and, you know, take over Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever the heck we're doing, anything like that. So please share the show with someone, like it, subscribe, anything that you can do. That's appreciated. So that's out of the way. So I am going to introduce to you guys a good friend of mine, a mentor of mine. I've worked with him in the past. His name's Nick Scarabosio. He is a co-owner, I believe, of Culture to Cash. It's a really, really interesting stuff. He talks about growing and scaling companies. He's doing some really, really cool stuff. So welcome, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm good, Dan. Nice to see you, man. It's been a while, so I'm excited to have a chat today.
Yeah, absolutely. It has been a little while, but you know, it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, I think like you and I are, even though we never truly met in person, you know, we can kind of just pick up where we left off with stuff. So that's awesome. Maybe we'll change that soon. Who knows?
Yeah. Hopefully I get out to the East Coast soon. I think I'll wait till after winter. It's cold enough here in Colorado. So I'll come out in the
Yeah, that's probably a smart move for sure. Well, so what the heck is Culture to Cash, man? Tell us about Culture to Cash.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, co-founder of Culture to Cash, I've got two business partners, Matt Blanton and Corwin Smith. And what we focus on, it's something that's not new to the business world. So any of you guys who own businesses, you've heard it before, is how do I scale and grow my business? We get into this game and we want this grand idea to come to life, and we have early success and then we hit pitfalls and then we have more success, more pitfalls. So how do we truly scale and grow? But what we do differently is we take a very people-first approach. So that's why the name is Culture to Cash, is we believe wholeheartedly that the culture of your business is in direct correlation with your success. And the way we look at that is a couple of different pieces. First, you as the owner, what does life look like? What is it you actually want? Are you living the dream that you set out to have? We find that most people that are entrepreneurial and start their own business, well, what they really created was a job. They don't have any freedom. They don't have the revenue they want. They don't have the time to spend with the kids and the wife. So they just really work themselves into a, instead of a 40-hour a week job, an 80-hour a week job. Now, if we can start to get the business owner in alignment and start working on their purpose, their passion, how do we layer that down to different levels of our team? And that could be one or two team members. Upwards of, we have companies that are running 700-800 employees. And when we can see culture is alive and well, no matter the size of your team, the scale and growth is a byproduct of that. Yes, there's strategy involved and some tactical movement of pieces, but really when culture is alive and well, scale and growth comes naturally to companies.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense, man. So, I mean, like how, I mean, you've talked about this before, like there's this, you know, this hustle and grind like type of like lie. And it's just, it's not, you know, I've been in there too, where I remember, you know, just working 80, 100 hours a week, just like not getting anywhere. Like, what the heck am I doing wrong? But like, how do you transition? Like, how do you go from this, you know, constant hustle, constant grind, to kind of having that balance? Is it purely a revenue game, or is there different pieces to that?
No, funny enough, yeah, revenue is a part of it. Sure, we have to have revenue if we want to run the business the way we want, live the life we want. But funny enough, the way we get out of the hustle and grind is leveraging the tool that we all have access to that you talk about a ton in the podcast, is the computer. So the hustle and grind was this mentality that was beat into the American people during the first industrial revolution. We had factory workers, we had lines, we had, you know, you've seen the movies, or maybe you had a family member who was part of that 80s stuffy corporate culture, workers down here, executives up here, we don't talk to each other. Well, something drastically changed in the 80s to 90s with the invention of the personal computer. We now entered the fourth industrial revolution and everyone had access to this piece, this tool. And now we see the globalization of marketplace. We see everything that's going on and all of us can use it. The problem is a lot of us don't know how to actually use it. We buy these real fancy Mac $3,000, $4,000 computers and we check our emails. Or we maybe get on Facebook and see people. So what the shift needs to be to get out of the hustle and grind is how do you participate in the most competitive, technologically advanced world humans have ever seen? And the secret behind that is it's not going to get any easier. It's probably only going to get harder. But how do we shift out of that mentality? Because hard work's great. Hustle and grind, there is a time, there is a place, whether it's coding a website or building a car, there are times you just got to get down and dirty and work a 50-hour work week. But for the rest of the time, how do you remove yourself from just this hard work mentality of how do I leverage technology? How do I leverage skills? How do I build something that matters and increase everything as a byproduct of it?
Yeah, I mean, and we were actually talking about this beforehand. So before we hit record, I just got done watching this Undercover Billionaire show of Grant Cardone's season, right? And when you were talking about that, just reminded me, like, there, for those of you who don't know, I highly recommend watching it. He's dropped off in a town he's never been in with $100, a truck, and like no name, right? He's Grant Cardone. He's like one of the biggest business guys in the world. But what did he do? He didn't get a job. He didn't go and grind and hustle and do all this stuff. It was through partnerships. He would not have done that without being aligned with the right people. I mean, there was times he was just cold calling, going through stuff, getting stuff done, hustling, right? But there was time, like, it would not have been possible looking back on it without the partnerships and the people that he was able to leverage. So I guess that kind of, you know, transitions into this next piece. You know, for someone who maybe is in this transition phase of, well, you know, maybe it's a software company, maybe it's a, you know, an in-person company, whatever the case might be, you know, is there are people really the solution? Is technology the solution? Is there a combination of, I mean, I know it's different for every business, but, you know, you've said that before, like a lot of times we see people as the problem, but you say that they're the solution, right?
Yeah, well, people are the problem, but often we are looking externally at the people. So this happens very commonly as we start to grow our first business, our small business. And what happens is we hire, but we have no idea how to hire. We have no idea how to train, how to lead. So we just start pointing the finger. Oh, it's their fault. It's their fault. No, let's turn the lens around. It's our fault. We didn't understand what, who, how, when, because we didn't have a strategy. So what we have to start to do to make people the solution is take a step back. Again, it goes to being very clear on what is it you actually want. I get into this conversation with business owners a lot where they're maybe doing $3-5 million a year in their company and they're taking home good net profit. And they tell me, Nick, I want to grow this thing to 100 million. I go, why? Like, are you not living the life you like right now? Or do you really want to just create more headaches for yourself? Because yeah, it looks really cool on a spreadsheet, your profit and loss, to have those two commas and all that fun stuff. But it comes with a lot of pain. So that's the hustle and grind. And then married with the only way to scale and grow is through people, because people are the solution, even in a technology-based company, because technology does not run itself. It is still people managed. Yeah. We manage systems. We lead people. So we have to bring in the right people to manage the systems. We need to learn how to lead them as the owner. And that's where the growth occurs. But if we continue to point the finger and look and go, nope, it's Bob's fault. Bob's a crappy employee. I don't like Bob. Well, you're just going to hire Bob version 2.0 when you get rid of Bob. So you got to change the way you look at it and start investing in yourself and start investing in your people.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So, I mean, it's important, right? Like, you know, what you're talking about too, it's like, there's, I mean, just sticking with this level of like, okay, so there's people who are just in the startup phase. There's people who are in the, you know, medium phase, larger phase. Like there's a whole spectrum of businesses and stuff, but you know, That's really powerful what you said. I think a lot, especially in the technology space, a lot of people just have this idea. It's very sexy nowadays to just have like the next platform, or I raised $100, you know, or $5 million for this cool product. It's like, great. You know, we just had a gentleman on the podcast a couple episodes ago. It was like, yeah, when you get funding, it's like you just wake up the next day and there's a bigger number in your bank account. And you're, but like, you still have to go hire these people. You have to still do these things. Nothing else changed. Like, not one other thing changed. We still had the same problems as yesterday. We still had the same systems as yesterday. It just, like, our bank account went from here to here. That was the only change, you know? And that was really interesting for him to say that. So, I mean, really, is it about, like, you know, I think you went through this too. Like you said, you go through these years of growing and scaling companies, but then you get to this point where you might want to scale, you might want to grow, but it's really about aligning with your values, right? Like your internal values and being like, no, I've reached this level and that's okay. Or if I do want to grow it, like, so tell us a little bit about, like, you know, did you ever have this happen to you where like you grew a business that wasn't aligned internally? Like what happened in that process?
Yeah. I mean, what got me to this point today of wanting to do this for a career, wanting to help other business owners, was growing and scaling my own businesses. I was in the real estate industry in the San Francisco Bay Area, did real estate and property management for 17 years. In between some of those years, for 10, I owned and operated gyms. And I really loved the ideation phase, the building of the companies, but the managing of the people, all the problems that came with it, they just started to take a toll on me. You know, I'm very open about my past. At one point, I was 330 pounds, heavy alcoholic, highly disconnected from my wife, my kids. And other than the physical appearance, you know, and I'm a big athletic guy. So most people are like, oh, he's just a big guy. He's probably really strong. Like you look at the numbers game and it's, man, Nick's crushing it. Well, on the inside, Nick's miserable. He's depressed. He's unhappy. He's not doing what he loves. And I see this time and time again inside of business. We all have a unique capability, a unique skill, and we're really good at it. But we start to bring all the other pieces in when we become a business owner. And, hey, I'm not good at HR. I'm not good at accounting. I don't want to be the manager. I'll be the owner, but please don't make me speak in front of the group and tell them what to do. And this all starts to wear down on us. So when we come and we create a strategic plan and we set the goals and the visions, what we can start to do is understand what are the people or the pieces or the technology that we can put in place to remove us from the places we're not happy or not good and allow us to only work in our zone of genius. So I'll stick in the tech realm because I see it often. If you have software development, rarely does the ace coder, the guy who can just rip out code, rarely, I don't think I've ever seen it, is he the best manager for the project and for the team? That's the guy who just wants his headphones on, lights off, just ripping out code. But what do we usually do as companies? Well, it's our best coder. He's got to be a great manager. Make him a manager. And then all of a sudden his coding drops. He seems on edge all the time. He's pissed off. And we're going, well, what happened there? What wasn't his zone of genius? Let that guy sit in his cubicle or his room drinking, you know, his sodas and headphones on and not talking to the world. And let's go find someone who likes to lead people. Let's put the right widget, right cog into the machine and let it keep running better rather than forcing ourselves to do things we don't like.
Yeah, no, I resonate with that too. Like I've literally told this to people who even work with some clients of mine. It's like if I could choose, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs feel this way too. Like sometimes, like if I could choose one thing that I could do every day, it would be that. I could sit here with my headphones on and, you know, some background music on and just do and design stuff and build stuff and just do that all day. But the problem is they don't have any sales. They don't have new clients. They don't have new, like, and then I'm like, oh crap. Now I don't have all this thing. Right.
For fun at that.
Yeah. And then it becomes not fun because then it's like, well, I got all these things and oh my gosh, this is not working. And, you know, and we have been down that road many times. And I mean, that's one thing that I've really started to learn as I've kind of stayed, like I was in that mindset where I wanted to grow. And I did for a little while. And then I kind of at one time out of necessity, I scaled back, but I've also liked that. And that's kind of where I wanted to stay for now. The Grant Cardone show has got me thinking to go back the other way, to be honest. But, you know, what I've found as a solopreneur, as someone who kind of runs on my own, that AI is really, really helping to fill in some of these things, like staying in my zone of genius. And then an idea pops into my head. I can go to ChatGPT and I can type in some stuff and boom, it cranks some stuff out for me. And there's other tools I've used and things like that. So, you know, is that in your experience so far, no matter what business level, is that something you encourage people to start using more of, or is there a balance to that, or, you know, what's your experience with that?
No, for sure. I am definitely one of the people that is excited to see the growth in AI, how fast it's coming along. You know, I hear the arguments all the time. Oh, it's taking away jobs, or it's going to take my job. No, it's not. It's still a machine. Machines have to be operated. So if you lose your job to AI, what I hear is I refuse to level up my skills to be the one to operate it. Yes. Are there a few different jobs that maybe eventually it'll replace? I took my son to dinner a few weeks ago, and it's one of these Korean barbecue places, and the waiter was a robot. Okay. Yeah. I could probably say that waiter lost his job, but go become the manager, go level up your skills, you know, figure out how to go to the next level. So one of my partners, Corwin, has a great, great line that I love is the people who learn to use AI are going to make house cats of the rest of the human beings. So use it, leverage it, make it a system, make it a process. I'm right there with you. I have to write emails all the time. And instead of me trying to pound my brain against the pavement, I just go, okay, what do I want to say? And I just tell ChatGPT, here's the 10 bullet points I need to cover. Write an email for me. Boom, done. I'm not a coder. I don't have a lot of skills like you do in it, but I have to run our company website every once in a while. I'm like, okay, I need it to do this and get to here. What's the code? And it kicks it out for me. So it's a tool, much to what I said in the beginning of, we are in this new industrial revolution with the invention of computer. The more you can start to leverage technology, the more capacity and ability you have to be in your zone of genius and really grow something of meaningful importance and impact.
Yeah, 100%. And just to kind of comment underneath that too, you know, I think I, especially for someone in this field, and I use it all the time, and I've started to learn, like, I can move so much faster with this stuff. But I think for people who are immersed in this a lot, you start to think like, well, everyone's doing this. Everyone, like, what makes me this, like, but you know, everyone's going to know that this is AI or this is whatever. And in my experience, we're still in the early, like the super early adopter phase of these things. Like it sometimes blows my mind when I've talked to people. I'm like, yeah, just go to ChatGPT and type this in. They're like, what's ChatGPT? I'm like,
yeah, it's shocking when they don't even know it exists at this point. Yes. Agreed.
I'm like, oh man. So, I mean, so I think like for those of you out there, like there is opportunity still in this. Like there is, like you said, it's just, there's it's almost like every day I start to think of new and innovative ways to like leverage this stuff. And it's amazing how much faster you can go.
I will say, what industry you want to be in, if you have an advantage with AI and start to learn it right now, you will be far ahead of everyone else. An example I can give is one of our clients, a company that's been around 50, 60 years, excuse me. And they're in the event production space. They put on amazing events for their clients. You call them, you say, hey, Nick, I got a workshop or I got something. They build scenes. They do the fabrication. But in a conversation yesterday, you know, it's aware to them. I think the terminology uses, we got to go find some of these young kids who understand how to use AI plan drawing tools. Well, this is still a industry where even though AI is going to kick out the CAD drawings and the tools and everything, there's still a human being that's going to go have to cut the wood, glue it, nail it, put it together, ship it. So there's, no matter the industry, I would challenge some of your listeners to put in the comments of the show, well, it won't work in this industry. And I'll find a way that it's going to. Because I work from blue collar all the way through white collar. And every single one of our clients, there is a need for some form of AI. But more importantly, there's the need for the person that understands it, knows it, and will leverage it.
Yeah, it's just the next level of thinking differently. You know, like there's, when the automobile was invented, like there was all of a sudden people started thinking, oh, I could use this to haul wood from Johnny's house to Bob's house and make a commission. Like there's like this, it's like the internet. Then the internet comes along. Oh, I can make money by doing this. AI is the next thing like that. So anyway, don't want to beat a dead horse with that one. But so one thing I noticed on your Podmatch profile, I keep giving Podmatch shout outs. I humble brag here. I actually brought Nick to Podmatch. So shout out to me. So you mentioned this word owner led business. What the heck is an owner led business? How is that just not just a regular business?
Yeah. So we focus on owner led businesses for two reasons. One, for what we do is culture to cash, really large corporate structures that may have a board or have been around a long time, a lot of red tape, a lot of bureaucracy. So allowing for change to occur can take a long time to get that flywheel moving. But more importantly, myself and both my partners, we were all owners of companies at one point. We all built and exited, and we all felt the struggle and the pain of being that 30 to 35 to 45 year old male woman who's got a family, who's got this business that looks like it's close, but how do I balance? How do I manage? So we want to work with owner-led businesses where the individual is still very much in the day-to-day. And how do we get you to still be in the day-to-day, but at a much more effective rate? So one of our brand promises to our clients is, how do we cut the time to manage your business by 50% in the first 90 days? And I ask people often, like, what could you do with 50% more time every day? Now, some of us psychopaths who are just prone to everything business, we're just going to go find more stuff to fill our time. And hopefully it's of good value. Sometimes it's not. But for the ones that kind of hit that enlightenment phase, it's like, wow, I could go to Johnny's baseball game without feeling stress or anxiety. Maybe I could take a vacation. Haven't done one of those in 6 years. So we really see the impact with owner-led businesses. So we really hone in on it because we want to create space and freedom for them.
Okay, that makes sense. I kind of had a figure, like, you know, there's board businesses and there's, you know, different things like that. So that's interesting. Okay. Well, you know, a couple of the past things we've talked about kind of apply with this, but I'm curious, like, you know, this world, we're more connected than ever, but we're more disconnected than ever. You know what I mean? Like we have 9 million different social platforms, but we're all so what is it like, you know, social media anxiety or depression? Like it's just, there's like, what's that syndrome they call it where you see everyone's like awesome life on Facebook. And then you're just like, oh God, I hate everyone. My life sucks.
Yeah. Cause we forget that they're only showing the highlights. They're not showing the downs.
It's the highlight really. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, but as an entrepreneur, as, you know, in someone that's in this world, like, you know, that's a real thing because I've struggled with this too. Like I wrestle with this all the time. Like I hate being on social media and yet I know I have to do it. It's like a love hate type of thing. But, you know, but what I'm getting at is, you know, like this connection, like how does this spill over? Like the connection I have to my business, the purpose I have behind my business. You know, if that's good and that's on fire, that leads into purpose and passion in other areas of my life, right? But if it's disconnected, that's kind of, you experience the same thing in other domains of life, right?
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that I often say is, you know, it started in the 80s, early 90s, is this concept of work-life balance. There's never true balance. We always have to have a give and push. There are going to be times where work takes up the majority, but then there's times that we can really dive in on the family. What we want to fight against is the huge swings of the scale. And most business owners have been through that. They go, nope, it's 2024. This is the year. Not going in on Wednesdays and Fridays. I'm spending time with my family. And then in July, they turn around and they ask their bookkeeper, they ask their teammate, why are sales in the gutter? Well, because we didn't build the systems for you to just take off, John. Yeah. We need to work the systems, the sequences, and make sure we can do it. So there it's this push and pull of work-life balance that we have to be aware of. But what it really comes down to is, are you clear on your why? Why are you doing it? What is it for? And I'm not just talking about some woo-woo, oh, to leave the world a better place. That's great. But to leave the world a better place, you still have to be very clear on three specific intentions. What's your life intention? What are your financial intentions? And then what are your career intentions? And I do them in that order specifically because if we understand the life that we truly want to live, well, part of that is knowing how much money I need to make per year, how much I need to save. At some point, we are all retiring by choice or by chance. So what is it going to cost me to live from 65 to 95? Do I have enough money? Am I going to be able to open the fridge and know that I have food in there at 72 years old? So once I know what kind of life I want to live, and then I understand what the financial ramifications, the financial requirements are, then if I align my career with what I love to do and can it fulfill those first two intentions, then we're just on, it's go. Race is started. Let's start working. Doesn't mean it's easy, but when we have that clear vision, we can really dive into it and it makes us happier individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, as a personal anecdote, I remember when we went through this exercise you just alluded to of, I forget what you called it exactly. It was like your,
it's the freedom number. What's the number you think?
The freedom number. That's what it was. And I remember we went through the whole exercise of it and it literally comes down. You had a whole calculator and everything. And it said, here's the number that you need. And I don't even remember what mine was, but I remember it scared the living shit out of me. I was like,
that's for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it will, for those of you, and what he's getting at is like, what is it exactly? It's like the money that you need to make like every day, or it kind of broke it down back, reverse it.
It's the amount of money you need to earn, save, and invest between now and your age of retirement. Looking at, hey, most human beings, we're blessed to be in this generations of people where life expectancy is longer than normal. As long as you're taking care of yourself, yes, there's the outliers. But you're going to have 30 to 40 years of, we don't even call it retirement. We call it unemployment because you're not working. Mm-hmm. So how much do you want to live? Now, most people, the number they have in mind is nowhere near what they actually need. Because if we broke it down, it's, hey, you're only going to have $100,000 a year if you have that amount of money in the bank, which is fine if everything's paid off by the time you retire. If you have zero debt, if you have nothing else, and you want to live a pretty low-key lifestyle. Now, most people, what they look forward to in retirement is, finally get to take trips with my wife. I get to go see the grandkids. I get to do fun things. Well, it costs money. So what's that number you need to live the life you deserve for those 40 years of work you put in? And what we do is we not only take the number and go, okay, that's a big number. I'm happy to share. My current capital at work gap, the number I need to put in the bank, I'm 41 years old today. I plan on retiring at 65. I have a $16 million gap. So I've got to earn, save, and invest $16 million between now and then. And remember, that doesn't mean only $16 million. I've still got to live the next 24 years. So it's a big number, right? Makes your jaw drop. You go, oh, holy crap. So what we use that for is to then back into, what do I need to make per year? What do I need to make per month, per day, all the way down to hourly rate? And the hourly is usually what freaks people out because it's this massive difference in what they're currently getting paid or what they're charging. So once we understand that, doesn't mean, okay, rest easy. I got the number. I'm going to start charging $500 an hour tomorrow. No, I mean, I wish it was that easy. I'd probably be a billionaire already if I could sell that magic pill. But what it does allow us to do is understand, okay, if that's what I need to get to, and this is where I'm at today, what does the planning look like in between to level myself up, increase the skills, the capabilities to get to the person who can charge that amount of money per hour?
Yeah. And for those of you who are interested in that, do you still have that actual like assessment that people can work through, or do you have any?
Yeah. Feel free to drop my email in the show notes, and anyone who wants it, just send email Nick, send me the freedom number formula. It's a spreadsheet that I've got a video. I'll walk you through it. Just don't come crying. The number is a lot bigger than you expected.
Yeah. So, yeah. Disclaimer there. Don't come crying to Nick or Dan. If the number
crying,
is,
I'll offer you a solution, but yeah, it's going to get to see many people who are okay with the number, I guess is the way I would put it.
Yeah. Just don't send us any nastygrams is all we ask there. So, Okay, that's really, really neat. Yeah, I highly recommend that for anyone listening. It still scares me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I should really go through that again, because when I did that the first time, I was like, holy shit. Okay.
It's an exercise we do annually just to understand, hey, have I started to close the gap? How did I level up last year? And if I'm at the same spot, it's not poor me or how dare you or shame on me. It's just, okay, what does this year look like? What do I need to do?
Yeah, for sure. So, okay, I want to switch gears a little bit, because I know you've talked about this a lot, and I remember we were through this as well. You talk a lot about your business being a strategic asset, right? And I think this is definitely something to keep in mind for everyone, especially in a technology platform. Literally becomes this is a very easy metaphor to talk about. It's like this becomes an asset that's either a sellable asset, it can drive revenue, it can do like it's a thing outside of it. And there's one thing I've learned, the more and more I've done stuff, is don't tie your emotions to it. It's a factual thing. It provides its own value. It does this type of thing, whatever that case might be. So, do you have any, when you talk with business owners and different people at the different levels about turning their business into a strategic asset that, drives like satisfaction, finances, all that type of stuff. So for in the in do you have anything, maybe this may be off the wall question, but like, do you have anything in the technology space specifically that you would tell someone, like, here's how you build this as a strategic asset?
Yeah, so it really doesn't have to be about the strategic asset. When it comes down to it, all businesses are fundamentally the same. We make an offer of help, someone accepts the offer, we make a promise of delivery, and there's an exchange of goods or services in return. Since the dawn of time, the first ever human business transaction, that has never changed. So whether you're a ditch digger or you're an AI chatbot builder, that is the fundamental principle of your business. So what you have to begin to look at it is, if that's the fundamental principle, the strategic pieces I have to look at is, am I clear on my offer? Most people are stuck in business because their offer is not clear. So you make me an offer of help, but if I don't understand it as the consumer, why would I purchase it? Now, when I understand the offer and I can make a great offer, I can go to the next problem that arises. What does fulfillment look like? And this is where treating your business as a strategic asset is, fulfillment cannot rely solely on you as the owner, because if it does, that's where we get into you have a job, not a company. The day you decide to leave, the business shuts down. So how do we build a company that's got predictability and repeatability without me having to turn the wheel every single day? So how can I start to build pieces that function without me? Now, when I start to create revenue, now when I start to create value, someone will want to buy it. So I have that asset. After we understand the fulfillment process, we look at, well, how long does it take me to fulfill? What does it take? And that's when we back into how much we should charge, when we should charge, things of that nature. So if I know today for me to turn out a website, it takes me roughly 7 days, well, I'm going to make an offer to fulfill within 10. Give myself some buffer, but the more I can compress my fulfillment cycle down, well, guess what? I can make more offers. And then I can bring people in and I can make more offers. So once we have those three pieces, then the exchange of currency or goods or services becomes a lot easier because the system's predictable and repeatable. People start to build trust with me. They start to understand I'm really good at what I do, what we refer to as value, authority, leadership. And from there, that's when the business starts to grow. And that's when it becomes an asset.
Yeah, no, that make, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, often what happens is we don't look at it that way. And while we're really good at what we do, when we go to sell our business, it's actually not worth as much as it looks like it is on paper because we're the cog in the machine.
Yeah,
So I run into it often. Guys say, hey, I want to sell my business. Cool. How much do you think it's worth? 5 million. How'd you come up with that number? That's what I need to retire. Okay. Well, unfortunately, most guys buying businesses are pretty savvy and they're not giving out charity. So show me how it's worth $5 million.
Yeah. And that has to do with the value and the income and the expenses and the, future and all that
Yeah,
stuff.
there's
That's
all that game that those lawyers and those guys play. But if we start now building a always start building your business as if you're going to sell it someday, because one day, by choice or by chance, say that again, you are going to exit your business. The hope is that you exit it by choice for the amount of money that you deserve, that you planned on getting 10, 15, 20 years prior.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, I remember the, one of the things that when we went through building the different quarterly things that you would always kind of have us do, was the profit margin percentage. And that was really actually something I had never really given a lot of thought to. So that was super helpful. And I think, and that's what I think is so attractive and what's so interesting about SaaS offerings or platforms of that nature is the profit margin in a normal company, right? Like whether you're middleman or whatever, like it's not like, think about profit margins of a restaurant business. I don't even know what they are. They're probably super low,
but if they're good.
Yeah. But in a technology company, that's literally flipped on its head, because you might have 80, 90% profit margins, which is just like mind blowing when you think of that. And if you're removed as a cog in that wheel like that, like here's a SaaS, you sign up for it, you get this product, you get this thing, off you go. I'm going and having a beer on the beach. You know what I mean? Like that's, I think, the appeal of it. But then, you know, there's this idea of everyone wants to build that out of the box. But, you know, what I've found is that you can do things manually at first, and that's okay. Prove, like we said before, you prove that this is actually something that needs to be systematized, can be fulfilled. Like if it takes me 5 seconds to do, maybe I can automate that someday. And then eventually you're just removed from that. You know what I mean? I'm kind of in the process of doing that with a new platform that I'm building. Is there's going to be some manual pieces that I know are going to take me 5 seconds. But as I grow, I know here's exactly what I'm going to do when it comes to time to automate this, and I don't need to do it anymore. And then it's just going to be hands off. And then it's just promote, 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 sell, 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 promote, 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 grow the revenue, exit one day. You know what I mean? So interesting.
Yeah, you have to start with the unscalable. I truly believe most business owners get stuck because they go too far ahead and they want that full automation. They want to be out right off. You do have to hustle and grind at the beginning. Like mm-hmm. I say, freedom from the hustle and grind, but it does take work in the beginning. So start with the unscalable, prove the product, prove the worth, start getting clients. Then when you have the ancillary revenue, you go, okay, what's the thing that's taking up the most of my time? This piece, great. How do I automate it? Who do I hire? How do I get out of that piece? And that allows you to sell and do more. And you just keep repeating that cycle until you have super healthy profit margins, you have a pretty automated system, and you can do whatever you want. I'll give a great example. I've been floating between two daily planner softwares for the last few months, paying two different memberships. Like, I don't know which one I really like. I was like, I'm just going to pick one. All right, I'm going to pick product A. So I go to cancel product B, and the first thing is, well, oh, don't leave us. We'll give you 50% off for life. I'm like, oh, that's pretty. No, it's only going to save me a few bucks. So I know, no, I still want to cancel. Okay, final offer. We'll give you 70% off for life. I'm like, and we got a winner. I'm like, yep, I'm with you guys. So to your point, like SaaS models give us a really great buffer. But no matter what our business is, the goal is always to get to healthy, healthy profit margins, because it allows us opportunities. Vern Harnish has a great quote. I've always loved it. Revenues for vanity, profits for sanity, cash is king. You've probably been in those situations. You talk to a friend, you go to a networking event. Hey, how was 2023? Like, oh, it's great, man. I did $5 million. My brain goes to, well, how much of that was profit in cash? Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing $5 million with a 2% profit margin, it just sounds like a lot of work to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That probably is not fun. I've never been in that situation, but yeah, that would, because like, what's the, like you said, it's a vanity metric, you know, and just one
go
one
down quickly, to a 10% profit margin and make just as much money.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to fulfill as much. You didn't have to have as many clients. You didn't have to sell as much.
Yeah.
So when we start to pay attention to the numbers, we can make tactical decisions.
Yeah. I mean, just one thought that popped into my head was like, you either have a time problem or a money problem. You know, like when you're starting out, you probably have both, but you have all the time in the world. Like I can go cold call. I can go figure things out. I can put together some stuff. Like I have time to fix this problem. And then as you grow, you make money. Now you don't have the time for stuff, but you have money that you can say, who can I hire or what can I buy to fill this problem? And then you solve that way. So interesting. Well, like answer me this one last question, Nick. You know, maybe this is a personal question for me, but I feel like this will speak to some listeners out there and stuff like that. So, you know, me personally, my business, there's been a phase over the past, I don't know, 6-8 months where I feel like I may have lost a little bit of the drive. Like I might have lost a little bit of the passion. It's kind of, because again, building a business is doing a lot of boring shit over and over. Like no one really tells you that when you get started. You think it's going to be this great, awesome, sexy thing. And then you're just like, oh, it's just like doing boring things all the time. But that's what builds success. So how do I maintain, or how do I regain that passion? Or is there a process I can go through to figure out, well, maybe it's time to end this is what I'm doing, or maybe it's time to reinvigorate this or shift or anything like that.
Yeah, so there's a couple things you can do. And what it often comes down to is, again, going back to those original intentions we set. Is what's life? What's financial? What's career? Does this still allow me the opportunity to achieve those? It does. Then maybe I have to just sit down with myself and am I excited? Do I love what I do? And you'll start to find that certain things will pop up. Oh, I really love this piece. Yeah, I still love to do that. Lights me up inside. But sales over there, I would much rather not do sales. And we have to start making some decisions on opportunity cost. Okay, if I could get out of sales and do more of this, would I be happy? Yes. What's it going to cost me to get out of there? Whether it's time, money, people, whatever it may be. And this is the hard part of being a business owner. There are decisions that will take time for them to pay off. So do we have the fortitude to stick with it? Hey, maybe it's going to cost me $1,000 a month to hire a VA to just cold call people. And I've got to know that for 3 months, I'm not going to get a sale. But when that person catches speed 4, 5, 6 months in and they're doing 5, 6 sales a month, I can look back to those first 3 months. I can look to that version of myself and say, what a dummy. Like, why was he worried? This is easy. So it's just understanding, you know, sitting down with ourselves personally, that's that human aspect of it. And do I want to do this? And if I do, what do I love to do? What do I not love to do? One of the things we do is we call it the love-loathe matrix. Happy to share this one with anyone who wants it as well. I'll give you the PDF, just drop a comment. But we list everything we do on a daily basis on how good are we at it? And then how much do we like to do it? And if we're not really good at it and we hate to do it, why are we doing it? Give it to somebody else. If we love to do it and we're really good at it, yeah, mark that down. Do that every day. So once we start to understand where we're placing our energy, we can gain back some of our time, our energy, our momentum, and get back to what we really love to do.
Yeah, so you can list all that out, and then you can put on your Grinch costume, and you can go hate, 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 double exactly. Hate, loathe entirely. I love exactly. It. I could quote that movie all day. Awesome. Well, that's really good. That's really good stuff, Nick. So, all right, man, I really appreciate you coming on. For those of you who've enjoyed this, you know, like I said, I've actually personally worked with Nick. I can highly recommend him. He's full of wisdom. He's a really good guy. Where can we go to get some stuff from you, Nick?
Yeah. So you can go to our website, culturetocash.com, all spelled out. You can hit me on any of the social media platforms, handles the THE. And then my last name, Scarabosio, pull it from the show notes. Don't try to spell it. It'll be tough. From there, send me a message, send me an email, anything. I am a true believer in no matter what stage of business you're in, if we get into a conversation, if I can leave you with any value, I've won. You decide to step into a program or get some help, that's even better. But I'm not a shut off, shut down type of person. We're all at different stages. I remember in my first two businesses, that first year to 3 years, just wondering what the hell am I doing? And just got lucky and got surrounded by some great mentors and some people who are willing to pour time and energy and love into me. And it's what's gotten me to here.
Yeah. And right back at you, man, I consider you a mentor, a good friend of mine. Like you've really helped me along my path at different stages as well too. And I really appreciate that. So, well, thank you so much, Nick, for coming on. This was awesome. This was really good stuff. It's been a long time coming. I'm glad we finally got to do this. So, all right, guys. Well, that's it for this episode. Really appreciate it. Hope you got some good wisdom from Nick. Worth a re-listen for sure. There's some really cool stuff in here. And again, regardless of what stage you're at, like I think a lot of these principles and these things that we talk about, you know, we talked about here today can really apply to people. So, all right, guys, that's it. Once again, just please like, rate, review, subscribe to the show, wherever you're listening. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you are, it's always appreciated and very much valued. So appreciate all of you guys. My name's Dan Hafner. This was Nick Scarbosio. Get the link for his stuff in the show notes here, and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Well, I will, maybe Nick will, who knows, maybe he'll, whatever, but I'll see you guys, or we'll see you in the next one. So yeah.